welcome Angie D. from Blythe, California.
I'm Angie, and I am an alcoholic. I think I'm just getting too old for this, or too much of this and too much of that. My husband just got me a new computer. That's probably why all of a sudden I want to stay home. I do want to thank the committee and you for your generosity in bringing Richard and I here. He's probably left because he can hear my story anytime he wants. In fact, he can hear it when he doesn't want to. Oh, he's sitting back there like a good gunfighter with his back to the wall. I am from Blythe, California. You all know where Blythe is, don't you? Huh? That's where God sends you when he's punishing you for asking for stuff. That's where Blythe is. I'm there because of Richard. That's why I'm there. Girls, do not dishearten. Do not lose heart. I had to kiss 1,000 toads to finally kiss one that turned into a prince. Richard is such a great guy. We're both dedicated to making me happy. I have him convinced he never had it so good in a woman's places in the mall. He's made me so absolutely useless anymore. I'm not good for anything except being Richard's precious darling. That's all I'm good for. But I'm here tonight because I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Through the grace of God that empowers in rooms like this, it hasn't been necessary for me to pick up a drink since December the 22nd, 1965. And that is the miracle for me, you see. I'm one that had to drink all the fun out of the bottles. I am one that had to go out and remove all doubt. You see, that's the kind of a drunk I am. I started with my problems long before I ever took a first drink. I'm a Mexican, just in case you're wondering. I know I don't have an accent anymore, but I was born and raised in a little barrio. If you don't know what a barrio is, it's a little Mexican community. In the days that I was raised there, we didn't let any Anglos in, and they weren't too anxious to come in there either. Heroin integrated our barrio. I was born into a family that wasn't ready for me then and isn't ready for me now. I was born a long time ago. I'm really a young person in an old container, but I was born when they kept the mothers in the hospital for a whole week, and when they came home with this baby, they didn't have a name for me, and the reason for that is because my daddy wanted to name me after his girlfriend, and my mothers were narrow-minded, you know? I had an older sister that was perfect. They always told her what to do, and she always did it, and she always did it right, and she screwed it up for me. Because I never knew how to be good until after I was bad. And then it's too bad, too late. They're always whipping on me, and I don't know I'm a better child. I just think it's for the price I pay for not knowing how to be good. If I'd have known I was a better child, I'd have held it against them guys. I held everything else against them. Now, they were divorced when I was about 7, and my mother would send me to the nuns so they could teach me to be a lady. And what the nuns thought was a lady wasn't appealing to me then, and it isn't appealing to me now. Not only did I not know about how to be good, but as soon as they said, "Thou shalt not," I had an overwhelming desire to do it. I may not have thought of doing it before, but as soon as they said, "Thou shalt not," it seemed like it would get in there and I wouldn't rest till I did it. I don't know what's wrong. I just know that somebody dared me and erased the nun's skirts to see what they wore under all them clothes, and they 86'd me from catechism. I got home and got my whipping. And the next day when I got to school, all the kids thought I was terrific. I never imagined all the attention I was getting. You see, me, I was born with an emptiness in my soul. There was a yearning, a longing, a hunger to be loved, to be wanted, to be accepted. As a little child, I used to worship my mother and wanted her approval and love so desperate. I'd have done anything. I'd have done anything. It seems to me that most of my life, I'd have given my love away to anybody that would have taken it, you see. I had an overwhelming feeling that said, do anything you want to me. Just don't leave me. Just don't leave me. The fear of abandonment was in place for me as a little child. The overruling emotion of my life, as I remember, is hugging myself and rocking and wailing like a wounded animal, because I don't know what is wrong with me. I just know there's something horribly wrong with me that doesn't seem to be wrong with other people. So when I got all that attention, it filled up some of them empty places. I truly believe I always had the pilot lit. All I ever needed was the fuel. My mother remarried a man and that was starting to get funny with me, and I went to her and I said, well, look at here, he's. And she said, you are a liar. You can't stand for anybody to ever be happy. You always have to ruin everything for everybody. And I felt like a leaf was in a wind, and nobody cared whether I lived or died, and I'm just a child. And I resolved my life in the way that I resolved my life, because I'm just a child. I started escaping in books, in fairy tale books, about the prince and the princess and live happily ever after. And I love to do those things, go home and just fantasize, because I had to resolve my problems in any way that I could. I started thinking if I could only get over to my daddy, I knew that life would be all right if I could only go to my daddy. Now, my daddy was over in the San Fernando Valley, about 60 miles from we were, from Orange County, in Orange of Orange County, in a little barrio of El Medina. And my daddy was on the San Fernando Valley where he'd taken up light housekeeping with a lady with 8 kids, and all he wants is one more. But, you know, I stole money because I don't have no money, so I have to steal it. And so I ran off to be with my daddy. Now, my daddy used to take people up north to pick grapes and prunes, and we were fruit pickers. And what I found out is God made 2 kinds of Mexicans, as fruit pickers and non-fruit pickers. And I'm not a fruit picker. They try to make a fruit picker out of me, and it didn't take. You know, I've gotten close to a lot of things that I really like to do in my life, but I've never been addicted to work. I am not in any danger. I just like to do what I want to do when I want to do it, and I want to stop doing it when I want to stop doing it. And I don't want nobody to tell me what to do. I think it's called self-will run riot. Well, we stayed beyond the season with the Gallo brothers in a place out of the Twilight Zone called Livingston in Northern California. And they gave my dad a case of sherry wine, and somebody must have said, thou shalt not. I had a big water glass of that sherry wine, and when it went down, it went boom. I mean, everything felt good. I felt like I put my finger in the light socket. Man, it was wonderful. It's just too bad something that good has to be wasted on social drinkers that don't appreciate it. Man, I loved it. I mean, it cleaned up all your sinuses and all your pores. I mean, it felt good. Anything that good, I want more. I'm a pig from the get-go. And I chug-a-lug me that, and I chug-a-lug me some more, and I don't know, I chug-a-lug me into the next day. And I tell you, I was born a long time ago in them Pachuco days when we used to wear them big hairdos. You come to the next day, that hairdo's all down your face. You're Gotta part your hair just to look through it. Man, I thought I'd just swallowed a tornado or something. Man, gotta have a drink of water so bad and just chug lug that water, get drunk all over again. I know something terrible happened. I don't know what happened. I just knew it was terrible. I was trying to look at people's eyes, trying to figure out what I did. Terrified to know and terrified not to know, you see. And I came to and I had a sense of shame, of being dirty, that went all the way through me. Because, see, I don't know what I had done. It couldn't have been something very bad. I'm just a child. I'm 12 years old. But I just had that sense of shame, of being dirty, that went all the way through me. And I don't know what to do with those emotions. I just got to be bad. I just put a, I don't care, because I always had to use that hard exterior to be able to protect that sensitive, vulnerable center that I knew that if I exposed that, I would disappear. Something horrible, I would just disappear. And you know, my drinking never really changed from that until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was always, I never thought that drinking was my problem, I just knew it was my answer. And now I'm just a child. I came back to my mother and she told me I couldn't come back because they'd been free of me over a year. And I was 13 years old at that time, and I started living here and there and everywhere, wherever people would put up with me for a little while. And a lady took me in for babysitting, and she let me do whatever I wanted to do. And I just, this is the time when I discovered the booze and the boys and the cha-cha-cha. God, I love the booze and the boys and the cha-cha-cha. I was one of the original topless, bottomless dancers in them parties I used to go to. I don't even get paid for it. I don't even remember it. But you know, the girls always wanted to tell me what I did the next day, so I used to beat them up, and then they didn't tell me, because violence is the only way I ever handled anything that was I was ashamed of and I was embarrassed. I also don't know how to work, so I take up burglary. It just seemed to be a good idea at the time. Your things were much more interesting than mine. Besides, you had more than me you could share. If anybody lived over in, I don't think anybody's grandparents lived over in Lemon Heights in Orange County, I'd like to make my amends tonight. It was very exciting. I was really surprised when the state of California discovered me. They didn't understand, but my case was different. They took me up before this judge, and there sat my mother and all them other purple lip people. They got purple lips because they're Mexicans. They don't have blue lips. They got purple lips, and they're sitting all there looking at me with that "we told you so" look, you know, that smug "we told you so" look in their eyes. And I'm sitting there slick, hip, and cool with my army shirt on, with my collar up, slouched in my chair. And the judge says, "Well, young lady, what do you think we have to do with you?" Well, I slouched a little more and said, "Well, man, you're the judge. You ought to know. There was a wrong person to have that kind of an attitude with. He sent me and my attitude to do a little bit of time for the state of California." And they didn't understand my case was different. I'm supposed to do nine months, but I do 13 months because I don't know how to be good there either. And I'm a walking bust. I always got caught with everything that I did. When they finally let me out, I took my first inventory, because I'm always one that wants to live in the answer and not in the problem. I took my first inventory. I don't have a job. I don't have an education. I don't have a home. I don't have any money. And I think, what an order, I can't go through with it. I better go out and find me a husband, because God knows I need somebody to take care of me. So I went out looking for a husband in places that husbands are not to be looked for. And unfortunately for both of us, I found one. There was a certain kind of man that always caught my attention. Usually they got big muscles and wear tight t-shirts, and they got tattoos, and they walk with a little slouch, got greasy hair, smiling, all teeth and smiling eyes, and they walk with a little hop, don't they? They just almost hip-hop around, don't they? They just go. Say, what's happening, baby? Oh, God, I used to go and get chills all over them. Still gives me chills. I used to think that look was charisma. Today I know it to be psychosis. My sponsor used to tell me you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit, but we tried. I tell you that. He was a mainline heroin user, and you just don't live happily ever after with one of those. He built them castles in the air, and I lived in them. And 3 months later, we were pregnant, and I was married in that order. And he had an idea of what a good Mexican wife should be, and I had an idea of what a good Mexican husband should be, and never the twain shall meet. And we both got the scars to prove it. Been apologizing to my kids ever since for passing on such bad combination of genes. But the good news is the fruit don't fall too far from the tree, and both of them are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, he starts finding out about all them stories about me, and he decides he doesn't want me to drink. But he introduces me to little white pills with crosses on them. I don't know what they are, but I sure knew what they did to me. I had one eyeball over there and one over there, and I'd make baby clothes all night long, put them together. Never could remember if it was time to put it together or tear it apart. I'd put that mariachi music dance and sing and clean my house with a toothbrush and have more darn fun all by myself. 2-3 days and nights of this all day, and my head would say, my body say, let's lay down. My head say, get up. Let's go. Have some more fun. And once I started taking uppers, I had to take downers, and I had to wash them down with whatever alcohol was working at the time. But you see, there used to be a bumper sticker that said, well, I found it. Man, I thought I found it. There's nothing like being pulled in all directions at once, because I couldn't stand the madness, you see, when I was just by me. And it promised me so much, and in 12 solid years I went into literal hell. And that's not what I wanted from life. All I ever really wanted was somebody to love me and care for me. Somebody that maybe some little corner of some barrio with the tortilla smells and the enchilada smells and the little slippers and the little kitties. Well, it wasn't that way with me and this dopamine, because you see, in our house, there was always just madness and violence and beatings and yellings and cursing. By the time I had my baby, I realized this man did not want to be married. And I realized that he didn't want to be married to me, because he had found that thing out about me that everybody found out sooner or later. That I didn't know what it was, but I was incapable of living in peace with anybody. By the time I had my baby, and they put that baby in my arms, I felt like finally, somebody belonged to me. That baby belonged to me. She was my baby. She inspired feelings within me that nobody ever had until very recently. That baby inspired feelings because I'm a child in a woman's body. I promised my baby I would never mistreat her, abandon her, and discard her as I had been. And I meant it with every fiber of my being. But I'm an alcoholic, and I am a woman alcoholic. When I drink, I have absolutely no choices and no rights. When I drink, I want to do what's in front of me to do because it's there to do. If anybody asks me why I do this, I cannot say. It just seems to be a good idea at the time. I never think of tomorrow, and I never think of prices. I just know is that I got to get away right now. I got to do it right now. And I took that baby and her sister to places that children should not be taken. I thought there was a monster that lived within me. It never occurred to me that I had something called alcoholism, because the alcohol had always been an answer for me. It was not my problem, it was my answer. I left their daddy after the second one was born because I felt old and used up, and I was 22 years old, and I felt older than I do today at 65, don't you know? And I spent 5 years as an unprotected bar-drinking woman. I know the feeling of degradation and self-loathing that a woman alcoholic goes through when she's unprotected and she drinks in bars and treated in ways that we don't want to be treated, but we get treated that way anyway. I kept falling in love. And when I fall in love, I fall in love all over my body. Every inch of me falls in love forever. The guy I fell in love with at that time, his name was CB. That was really wasn't his name. That was his nickname. It stood for crazy bastard. And just to tell you that, the guy, I know I'm not supposed to use profanity, but I don't know what else to say except that this is what he was, that was his name. And this is just to show you the kind of man that always caught my attention. After a while, CB got tired of me trying to kill him. I wouldn't try to kill him if they only behaved the way they're supposed to behave. And many a time I would come home when there was not enough chemicals to kill what I had in the cold water shack when I would come to and turn the light on. The sink would be black with cockroaches and there was mice and the filthy floor. And in that shack lived the two little girls that the romance of a mother had long since died, and the responsibility for them choked me. They were little children that had to fight in whispers, that watched television without any sound because they were terrified. If I would come to before it was my time to come to, I would start screaming and yelling, and it was like a madness would come over me, and like I would split, and I would watch myself scream and yell, and I would start hitting, and I would hit, and I'd hit, and I'd hit, and I couldn't stop, and I wouldn't stop until there was blood and tears and prayers and yells. And this is the ugly side of my story, don't you know? And we all have to have our own ugly side of our story. I didn't come here alone. I came here with two little girls with big eyes. I used to hear women talk about them taking away their children. In those days, I used to wish somebody would please take these little girls and give them a normal life. Because I knew I couldn't. I don't know what is wrong with me. I just know that I can't be like them clean ladies that I used to want to be like them. After 5 years of this kind of madness, my husband, who had been in some place in Texas getting the cure, started sending letters home and pictures and says, "Babes, this time it's going to be different." And so I'm one that clutches at straws. And when he comes home, it was a big old reunion, and he decides, "I'm not supposed to drink again." Oh, yeah, right. And so he knifes me, and I carry a gun, and 4 days later, he calls and apologizes, and so we ran off to Las Vegas to get married. I don't think if he didn't love me, he wouldn't have knifed me, I don't think. And we made the Mexican Geographic. We moved about 20 miles from Mama. And we bought they could never stand me if I can't go too far away, just in case they might forget who I am. And we bought a little ranch. Well, it was a ranch for us, an acre of ground with the chickens and the turkeys. And we even bought horses. I even married this guy in the Catholic Church. That's going to any length for a Catholic, especially since he was a Methodist. I mean, this guy was, he was going to get it no matter what. But you see, I'm a firm believer you can place me in the best of circumstances, and sooner or later I have to create what is inside of me, because it's inside of me that madness lives, don't you know? When he starts making his run to his connection, I start making my run to the wineries. The best thing I can say about Mira Loma, it's in the middle of four wineries. Blythe has been called the armpit of California, but I think Mira Loma is another part of the anatomy not worth mentioning. At least that was my experience there. Because as I lived there, every hope and every dream went out of my life. We joined the PTA. And that first Christmas, he was Santa Claus. If them folks had only known on whose lap their little darlings were sitting on. But I think that we really tried. At least I really tried. I don't know. He made a pass at my neighbor and I beat her up. And I found out that you're not supposed to beat up people when you're trying to be normal. And something happened to my drinking and it changed. And now I pushed everybody near and dear to me. My people, my friends and his people and his friends wouldn't come over anymore because they couldn't stand my foul language and my bad behavior. And so I started looking for answers. People like me, and I had heard the answers were in the Bible. So I started reading the Bible. I started going to churches. I started studying with people. I've been to churches where they dunk you and dip you and throw feathers or rather flower petals at you. And all. I even went to some there where some guy stands up here and says, "Who wants to be saved?" And I'd always be the first one down. I'm getting mine before anybody else got saved. And I'd go home and get unsaved. And I did this over and over and over again. And I just got tired. I got so weary. All I wanted to do was to die. And so I said, I planned to kill myself. And there was a feeling of freedom. There was a feeling of peace when I decided to kill myself. I saved all my sleeping pills until that day that man was home because I couldn't bring myself to kill myself in front of those little girls. The guilt was so incredible. So I waited until he was home and I told him I was going to kill myself. And he said, okay, and went back to watching television. We had a slight communication problem. I went and took a bath. I don't know if you know what a big deal that was for me to tell you. I went and took a bath. I went and took a bath because I wasn't bathing anymore. I wasn't cleaning my house anymore. I wasn't washing clothes anymore. I wasn't doing anything anymore. All I could do was go into my bedroom and lay in my bed and cry out in agony. Because I had come to the place in my drinking where I drank and I drank and I drank and my body's drunk and my mind's in agony. I could no longer drink enough to kill that madness that was inside of me constantly. Don't you know? And so when I planned to kill myself, I was relieved. And I went to bed and I put some clean clothes on and clean bed sheets on and I went to my bed to die. And I guess I took enough pills to kill a horse and all I did was sleep for 2 days and two nights. And when I came to what has got to be the loneliest day of my life. You see, I didn't want to be alive. I wanted to be dead. I wanted to be gone. And I couldn't drink and I couldn't be sober and I couldn't live and I couldn't die. This man had been in bed with me both nights while I was in that coma and never once did he consider taking me to a doctor or to a hospital. Everybody wanted me gone, and I wasn't gone. You see, when I looked upon that day, I would always sink into a pit of self-pity and agony. But I look upon that day today, and I realize my higher power has always had his hand upon my life. Because on that day, there was a knock on the door, is a lady from the PTA. If there's somebody I didn't want to see, it's a lady from the PTA. And there stood Mrs. Clean saying, "Hi." And I must have been downwind from her because she said, "What is wrong?" And I told her what was wrong. And in a moment of weakness, I let her in and I told her everything that was wrong with me. Well, everything that had been done wrong to me, that is. I don't know how you are, but I'm one that I can tell when I'm talking too long. When I'm talking too long, people usually get that glazed look in their eyes. Then I know it's time for wind it up. But that isn't the bad news. The bad news is when I'm talking too long, they get a glazed look, and then all of a sudden they come too. Then I know I said something I shouldn't have said. And so what I did is that I said something I shouldn't have, and she stopped me and she asked me if I ever heard of Al-Anon. And I'd never heard of Al-Anon. But I got the idea that if I went there, he would straighten up, so she cleaned me up and took me to Al-Anon. And somehow I didn't fit in Al-Anon. I just didn't fit in with them square broads. I felt like a whore would in a nunnery. There was absolutely no identification between me and them ladies. But I remembered that they hugged me. Them clean ladies hugged me. And I smiled at them. I gave them one of those... "The lights are on, but there's nobody home" smile. I had heard somewhere that I had a beautiful smile. Probably some guy wanted something more than my smile, but I knew that if I smiled them, they'd leave me alone. I found out years later they used to laugh at me. I thought I was fooling them. But you see, I believe the Al-Anons kept me around until... I could come to you, because it was no place in my mind that I thought that there was answers for me or that I was an alcoholic. Now, every so often, this lady comes and takes me there. I don't even want to go there anymore. One day I heard the word release, because I guess you got to be real brain dead to not hear that. So I went home and I had been contemplating justifiable homicide. I mean, I'm a Catholic. I can't divorce him. I mean, but if I killed him, I could go to the priest and go to confession and get absolution. Then I could get to go to heaven just in case there was one. I want to cover all my bases. So he used to sleep with his clothes on and a knife under the pillow, and I told him how I was going to release him. And I used to sit in the corner with put a big black coat on and watch him. When he go a dozing off, I go take a little peek at him and he go, "Oh!" It scared him so bad, I thought it was wonderful. It was almost like... And he would say unkind things to me. He'd say, "Baby, I may have a monkey on my back, but you got an orangutan." How dare he? He was so bad, he made me look good. One day I came home and he was gone. He took everything with him. He wasn't planning on coming back. And that's the way it had to be, because though that life was unbearable, it was familiar. And fear has always been the great compromiser of my life. You say, "Do anything you want to me. Just don't leave me." You see? I'd have pushed him to kill me, or I'd have killed him. And because bad luck comes in bunches, they kicked me out of Al-Anon at the same time. They got together and found out there was a fraud among them. And they designated this poor soul that had inflicted me upon them to throw me over to their husbands, who they didn't like either. And so she come and cleaned me up one more time and took me to Pomona, to an old, dilapidated old house. And she took me through the back, because I'm a Mexican, that's why they're bringing me through the back. And they took me through the kitchen, where all the Al-Anons are standing around doing whatever Al-Anons are doing in the kitchen. And I'm not looking at their faces, I'm just looking at my feet. I don't want to look at their face and let them see. let me them see me look at the look of contempt and disgust that I'm going to see in their faces. So I just look at my feet, and I walk through them ladies. Them ladies that saved my life. And I walk through them and listened to the music of Alcoholics Anonymous that come through that room. I listened to that belly laughter. How long has it been since I had any laughter? I listened to that belly laughter. The music of Alcoholics Anonymous is that belly laughter, that happy talk, that smiles that shine in the eyes. Those are the sounds of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never heard the words. I don't know what you're talking about. But I felt you, and I loved how I felt when I was with you from the first time I came around you. And newcomer, if you be lucky like me, I just let it wash over my soul, and I hungered for it. I wanted from these people what these people had. I just thought, it's too bad I'm not an alcoholic. You see? If there's another name for that disease that you and I have, it's called I Ain't Got It. Now, I know I'm weird and I know I'm different and three steps ahead of the men with the butterfly nets. But I didn't think I was an alcoholic. It had been an answer, you see. I just had to find the right combination again, you see, because nothing was working for me anymore. And so I sat there and let it wash over my soul. I often wondered, what is it and where does it come from? And it came to me one day, and it was a spiritual experience when I realized that which happens in here, we bring it with us, every one of us, and it intermingles and becomes a group conscience, a higher power, something that happens when you and I come together that never happens anyplace else. But I don't have it. I want what you have. I looked around at all them sober, single, good-looking young guys, and I said, man, I'm going to get me one of those. And I did. It was the sickest one there it had to be. I got rid of it. But it takes what it takes, and that's what it took for me. You said, my higher power doesn't care what draws us in here, you see. Doesn't care, because I was so in such a far country, there was no way that I could come home unless I got the attention that I needed at that time. And so I came around Alcoholics Anonymous as a visitor. For 10 months I came around as a visitor. In Pomona, in those days, they used to go around the room, and it came to me, I'd say, I'm Angie and I'm a visitor. I'm not an Al-Anon. They kicked me out of Al-Anon, and I'm not an alcoholic. I might be a little bit like potential. I used to be an alcoholic. When I was a kid, I was an alcoholic, but I cured her with Benzedrine. I'm not an alcoholic. And you put your arm around me, and you said the most important words that you and I have to say to each other. You put your arms around me, and you said, keep coming back. Keep coming back. Do you know what that feels like when you're used to people saying, keep on going, weirdo? It was quite a disappointment for me when I found out you were telling that to everybody. I thought it was just me. Now, you know, I start feeling a little uncomfortable coming to you and drinking, so I stopped drinking and doubled up on the Miltowns and Benzedrine and got weirder, and then I try to kill this guy. They don't want you to kill him when they're sober. He tries to get rid of me, and I'm not easy to get rid of because I didn't have a backup. So I moved to Pomona to be closer to the action. And there was some little boy walked in right out of a reformatory. He had big blue eyes and blonde hair, and I have an affinity for blue eyes and blonde hair. Today's blue eyes and gray hair, because time marches on. Anyway, he says he don't have a girlfriend, he don't have a surfboard, and he don't have a car. And I think to myself, come here, little boy, I'll take care of you. And I did, and I think he thought a Mack truck hit him. Boy, I educated him on sick women, I'll tell you what. But after that relationship was over, he decided to become a minister, and I'd like to think that somehow, in my small way, I helped push him over to God. I don't like women, and I don't trust men, and I don't leave you much. And I had never heard anything about withdrawals. All I ever heard is keep coming back and live happily ever after. I know you read steps and all that, but I didn't understand what it was to take the steps or work the steps. All I knew is how to read the steps. But you see, I understood that this man was the first man that had ever been kind to me. He was the first man that had ever been gentle with me. And he was the first man that had ever been proud to be seen with me. And I would have stayed with him forever. Because I would say, do anything you want with me. Just don't leave me. I am so grateful that God sent that gentle young man into my life. That walked those streets with me when our madness would be so great that I couldn't stand to believe in my own skin. And I would scream and yell and hit, and that's all I could do was walk and walk and walk. I do know today that you and I do not come together by accident. I truly believe that we come together by divine appointment. And yet every relationship is beginning and it's parting. It's beginning and it's changing. The only relationship that keeps on growing is a relationship that brought all relationships in the first place, which is my higher power. But you see, I didn't have a higher power that I believed and trusted in those days. I believed in God, I just didn't trust Him. And where I had thought I was a little alcoholic, I never really thought that I was powerless over alcohol. So with that attitude, I had another drunk in me. It was not my worst drunk. It just seemed to be my most hopeless one, where again I drank and my body's drunk. And my mind's in agony. And I'm one that had to go and drink all the fun of the bottles to remove all doubt that I was powerless over alcohol. And so on a rainy Wednesday night in December, a man named Carson went and brought me back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you put your arm around me and you said, "We're glad you're back." Now, I am not a thinker, I'm a schemer, and I'm not very bright, but I can feel good. I can feel you, and I knew that you meant it. And I am not a miracle. The miracle is Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the miracle. As long as I fulfill the conditions of the miracle, I am a part of the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety is not mine. Because last December the 22nd, I celebrated my 32nd birthday, doesn't mean that the victory is mine. I belong to us. I am a new person. I told you who I was up until the time I came to you, desperate and lost, having removed all doubt that I was an alcoholic. If you're like me, once I got to the place that it removed all doubt, terror came in because I knew I couldn't have what you had. And so I came desperate to you. Well, looking back, I wasn't all that sincere. It just felt desperate at the time. I still didn't like women just because I was sober. In the beginning, they were all my heroes. Johnny Harris is my hero. Johnny Harris is the one that carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to me, where he said that every woman that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous automatically deserves to be treated like a lady and behaves like a lady. He's the one that told me all the answers to all my life are between the covers of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first 165 pages. He said, throw away everything else, every reading material. Throw yourself into this program. Come to me, go to meetings every night and read that meeting every day. And I did what he said. Because I believed him. I believed him. In the beginning, they all knew more than me. After a while, I knew more than some of them. The day came when I resented a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if you've ever been in that place, but I couldn't stand this guy. I mean, I hated him. I don't have no resentment. I had either love or hate. In my first inventory, I couldn't figure out any resentments because I didn't have any. I just had, I either loved you or hated you. Now, I hated this guy. I hated the way he walked, the way he talked, the way he looked, the way he smoked, everything, the way he breathed. And then you would say things like, resentments are the one number one offender for the alcoholic. They're fatal, and God, that used to scare me. So I'd go to some of you guys that looked like you knew like what you're talking about, and I put on my smile. Remember that smile? Say, how do you get over resentments? And they say, turn it over easy, does it, this too shall pass, one day at a time, go home, read the book, keep coming back, and don't drink. And so... I went home and did it and came back the next day and checked it out, and there he was, gone. There, just go through a certain phase where you love it, you know, you just love to hate, and then it turns on me for some reason. And again, I'd go to somebody else, and again, they'd say, turn it over, he does it, this too shall pass. One day at a time, go home, read the book, keep coming back, and don't drink. After the while, I got the message, you don't know the answer either. Either that, or you're going to find out there's a frog among you. Kick me out of here. I didn't know you couldn't kick me out. I was always scared you're going to kick me out of here. I don't know why. I guess it had to be that way for me, because that's what kept me wanting what you had so desperately. One day this guy was talking and he started to cry. You know, I never heard anything he said, because somebody said, say the serenity prayer. I said 100,000 serenity prayers for him every time he talked. And then he starts to cry. God, I come to, he's crying. How embarrassing. Hasn't he ever heard of John Wayne, Iwo Jima, Pancho Villa, Emiliano Zapata? Somebody, for God's sakes, a guy's crying. Women and sissies cry. Gee, after the meeting, they all go and hug him. I said, oh, I don't gotta go. I mean, what I had was bad enough. I had to go hug him. I gave one of them stiff arm hugs, you know, just in case what he had was catchy. But he doesn't have any class. He just comes right in, puts his head on my shoulder, and starts to sob. And it startled me. It startled me. Because, you see, I was not expecting it. And the pain in him reached out and touched the pain in me. What can I tell you? The pain in him reached out and touched the pain in me. Because certainly the likes of you and I have known about pain. And the love that you had shared with me unconditionally, I hugged this man and meant it. And all that anger, all that resentment, all that obnoxious contempt that I had for him just melted away as if he had never been. And I held this man and rocked him. And I believe that that is the day that I felt that I belong here. Before that day, I had been like an invisible mirror, invisible glass wall on the outside looking at you. But this day was when I understood we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence, the likes of which we had not even dreamed. Those are the promises on page 25 that to this day grab my heart every time I read them. My journey began on that day. Now, this man, I still didn't like women. I don't like women. They got a lot of time because they look at me. I don't know what they're seeing, but whatever they're seeing, I don't want them to see them. And I don't like young women because I got this young guy and I'm like a monkey with its monklet. But I had a lady volunteer to be my sponsor. And she talked to me in ways that I didn't know what she's talking about. And she would say things like, you got to give up this young man or one day he will give you up. You got to stay home and learn to be a mother. And both of those things terrified me.
I had never been able to live without a man. I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about somebody that would hold me close and make that lonely, horrible something go away for a little while. And my children didn't like me any more sober than they did when I was drinking. In fact, they became teenagers. They were inflicted with out-of-body experience, alien takeover. But I didn't know that. I thought I had inflicted with them with that. So I did the most natural thing for me is I gave up the sponsor. She made me feel guilty. You know, getting a sponsor is much easier than getting rid of one. It's like getting a bottle is so much easier than getting rid of the empties, aren't they? Jesus, you just can't think of. And so I married that young man with that feeling like that lady had cursed me, and knowing that one day he would leave me. And you know, it just all comes to be. It all comes around. I got another sponsor who had a lot of time. She had 22 years, and she would talk to me in 22 years, and I'd nod. Yeah, you're right. I know what she's talking about. But she was my sponsor. And I never told her anything, and she'd say things to me like, "Dear, you're so good at waving the red herring." I don't know what that meant, but I would agree with her. And the time came when it was time. The time came when it was time, and my higher power felt that I had been carried long enough. When I was sober a little over 5 years, everything fell apart. My children started drinking and taking drugs. And I would pray, "God, spare my babies," and he didn't spare my babies. I had gotten involved with everything except my higher power. I had gotten involved in the activities of Alcoholics Anonymous, and secretaries, and doing all the activities, but the insides were still dependent on somebody else for my happiness. And when one time I came home, my children were so loaded and drunk and loaded on drugs, and we had a big fight, and I hit them, and they hit me back. One ran off to Ohio. I never even knew any Mexicans. They went a lot further there. I hated my mother. Only went 20 miles away. Here she, and one ran off to Ohio, one go to the commune. The one that went to a commune came home one day with a burn the size of a silver dollar on her chest where people had been putting cigarettes out on, and I died inside. And I had a nervous breakdown again. I tried to kill myself. And this young man went and took me to the psycho ward, went home, packed his clothes, and left me. And I felt absolutely naked. And the only reason I stand before you tonight is because my higher power had other plans for me. I had to give up everything, including the idea that I could kill myself. And it is from the women in Alcoholics Anonymous that came around me at that time that I learned to be a woman. You see, that I got sober in a toes burner country. And them little ladies that just got drunk in their kitchens came around me and held me up. And I found out that I was not so different from them. Maybe they drank in their kitchens and maybe I drank in bars. But we both felt dirty and we both felt unnecessary. In fact, it was easier for me because I didn't have to suck it in for anybody. And their ladies had to put it up, had to suck it in for their communities. And it is from the men in Alcoholics Anonymous that I learned to be a lady. Because you've treated me like a lady and I've behaved as such. But I threw myself into completely and absolutely into this program. Made peace with my higher power and said, "Okay, God, I'm never going to be happy again. All you ever want me to do is work with the sick women, drunks, and let them puke on me." All right. So I moved back to Orange County and knowing I'm never going to be happy again. And when I got to the other side, you know, there you have to go through some kind of stuff. I went through the other side where the part where I wanted to shoot him, and run him down the freeway with a car back and forth, till he's flat like a tortilla. My sponsor always assured me they don't lock you up for being crazy, only for acting crazy. And I threw myself into this program without any reservation, then that's the reason that I walk tall with dignity and self-respect today. Because when I got to the other side, I realized something, and nothing could ever own, or nobody could ever own me again. Because after all that's said and done, there's only you and me, God, anyway. He, my higher power, it just brings whoever I need to in the first place. I have nothing to do with who comes near or goes out. It's just that I know today that it's all my higher power. It's all God. I threw myself into this program. I started going to recovery houses, picking up ladies that didn't want to be picked up and taking them to meetings they didn't want to go to. I used to take them in my house and give them money, and they used to think I cared. I didn't care. I was just doing it because I'm supposed to do it, not because I cared. Nobody ever said I had to care. They just said I had to do it. Nobody ever said I had to want to do the steps. I just had to do them. You say, but I don't, God throws in the joker someplace along the line. When I acted as if I cared for them, when I did all the mechanics, I started caring. And something else came. I always wanted somebody to please love me. Oh, please love me. And I found out when I love you, feels like it feels to have somebody love me. In fact, it's nice to be loved. But it feels nicer. It feels greater to love somebody, to care about them, ladies. You see, I found out I got a sponsor. My sponsor was Mary Reagan. She was my sponsor for over 22 years. And she talked to me, when I grow up, I want to be like my sponsor. She talked to me in ways that when I talk that way to the women I sponsor, they never speak to me again. She told me her first language was profanity. And she used it on me. She learned to be a sponsor from Hitler. She did. But I loved my sponsor. I felt safe with my sponsor. I felt so loved by my sponsor. When she died, a part of me died for a little while. Then I realized that as long as I live, as long as I move this message on, she moves it on through me too, because she taught me so much in that time. Now I went, my children came back, they went to work, I went to school and became self-supporting through my own contributions. Because I'm an alcoholic, I don't drink. Because I'm a thief, I don't steal, because my sponsor didn't let me, you see. And I knew there wasn't any happiness after marriage, so I decided I would never get married again. My children came back. I didn't want them back. I found out how nice it is to live alone. I'm one of those ladies that lived alone for 9 years, hear me. 9 years, and got to say, man, this is great. I can go and come anytime I want. My house is, you see, either dirty or clean the way I leave it, and nobody's there to tell me anything. And I don't have to tell anybody anything. When they come living with me, they don't clean the house very good anyway. I always have to be nagging on them. When they're gone, I'm fine. And the day came when I had to find out. And the day comes, and we all have our day. The day came when my sister killed herself. My sister had always been held up as an example for me. Chose to take her life. And it was my destiny to be the one to find her. The last time a crisis had come into my life, I sunk into a pit, remember? And I had that nervous breakdown. This time something came together that said, God is the only giver and the taker of life. She chose to go home and he let her go home. How many times did I want to die and couldn't die? I truly believe that I have been spared because I am God's melody of life. And he sings his song through me. There's some place, somebody out there that needs to hear the places I come from. Now, I know I wasn't very good as a mother. I never knew how to be a mother. But my oldest daughter got married, made me a grandma. Man, I'm a good grandma. I finally found out how to get along with kids. Give them everything they want. Because time marches on, now I am now a great grandmother. I had two daughters, two granddaughters, and a great grandson. Do you know that little guy ain't got a chance of a snowball in hell? I mean, that little guy has cleaned out everybody. Except Richard, nobody can clean him out. I met Richard around that time, too. He was a newcomer, and I 13-stepped him, and if it offends any spirit... And if it offends any spiritual giants, I want you to know it offended me. I remember I was his counselor. I mean, that's even worse, isn't it? Well, he went home before I didn't make any moves on him. He made the moves on me. Well, what can I say? I'm a sucker for them candies and flowers and love letters and phone calls. And anyway, we went to a conference once where I was speaking where I didn't think anybody knew me, and he went with me, and here comes my friend Frank Sloan. You know your friends don't have no class. And you know it's coming, and he's coming, and Richard's coming behind me, and he's still walking with his little... You know. And Frank says, is he with you? I can't hide him, you know, and... He says, is he one of us? Well, he sees his nose is still red, you know. His head is going like them little dogs in the Mexican garden. He says, how long's that guy been sober? I said, oh. He said, Jesus Christ, and you give that poor guy a break. Let him get sober first. Hurt my feelings. I went to my sponsor and said, Mary, go, go, go. Because I like whining. So, Mary, go. She says, Angie, he's a nice guy. If you don't want him, I'll take him. Well, if he's good enough for my sponsor, he's good enough for me. I found out something else at that time. If you're afraid somebody's going to find out something about you, just tell them. And then you won't be afraid. Because, you see, it's a fear that makes barriers between us. You see, I didn't choose to where my heart was going to go. I just know today that God must have had a hand in it. You see, if we be together on October the 9th, we'll be married 18 years. And I think it's going to work. I think it's going to work. He just celebrated 19 years, so he's not a newcomer anymore. He says he was so sick he had to take the therapist home with him. But that the therapist was so sick she took one of the nuts home. So, I think that he was the lure that God used to get my sobriety to Blythe. Don't you know? I got to Blythe and they were not doing it right. And I'm not silent about it. And I'm pretty loud about it. And I found out that they don't like for you to tell them how to do it. But I didn't care. There's certain things that I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous. That it's my responsibility to move this program on as it was moved on for me. That I need to work those steps. That I need to adhere to those traditions. That my sponsor used to tell me, you're not here to win a popularity contest. Here I thought I was. I'm supposed to stand up for Alcoholics Anonymous and the traditions. That's my job. To voice my opinion. It is my opinion. This is of my opinion and my experience. That I need to work those steps. Because those steps are the things that save my life. And this program, I hope that this program does not change because I walk through it. Because you and I both know that the fruit don't fall too far from the tree. I already have experienced that in my immediate family. There are certain things that I did when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that I still do. Is I go to meetings. I read that book. I take the steps. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people. Those are the things that I do today to keep my sobriety going. I know there's only two reality checks because I suffer from a disease, a self-delusion. If I don't have a sponsor, then guess who my sponsor is? Me, my head, who got me there in the first place with all my nifty ideas, you see. I know there are only two reality checks for the self-delusion that the book says that I have. And that's a sponsor that's not afraid to tell me the truth. They tell there's no personal agendas on telling me what she sees in me. The reality checks are the meetings and my sponsor. My sponsor makes me accountable, and the people that I sponsor keep me accountable because they watch me. And I better not stumble because they'll all jump on me like a bunch of piranhas, I'll tell you what. But I need them just as much as I need a sponsor. When my sponsor passed on, I'll tell you I was there for my sponsor. When I found out she was in the hospital and she was terminal, I wound up in where she was at. And she says, "You drove all this way?" And I said, "Yes." And she says, "You're a good girl." And then she looked at Richard and said, "I knew I should have taken him away from you when I had a chance." I asked her what she could I bring her. And so she said she wanted Snickers. Them not big Snickers, just a bag of them little bite-sized Snickers. Not good for her. She wanted for the nurses and the orderlies that come in. She'd make them take my Snickers. And when I went home, I sent her a flower. I sent her some flowers with a big orchid that said, "You are the best," because she was the best for me. And I knew that she was so proud that I sent her those flowers. I called her up and I said, "Did the flowers come in? I got to have a little ego pat on the back." She says, "They're beautiful." I said, "Can I bring you anything else? Can I send you anything?" She said, "I'm out of Snickers. You might send some Snickers." And I said, "I can't send you Snickers. I'm in Blythe and you're in Orange." And I said, "How about if I send you some See's candy?" She says, "No, I want Snickers and I want them bite-sized Snickers." So it was a Friday afternoon. I went and bought a 2-pound box, a 2-pound bag of $6 Snickers, some little bites, spent $15 in overnight mail. But by golly, she got her Snickers. She died on Monday, but I was with her to the end. I walked with her because she walks with me. I got another sponsor. She is different than my sponsor, Mary. But I know that this is a different experience. That was my experience with her, and she will always live with me. But I have this other experience with this other sponsor. I told you that my daughters are members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it is wonderful to have your children as friends. I let them dump their pain on me. They had so much pain and so much resentment. I told them that it was my fault. When they blamed me, I agreed with them. I said, "Yes, it is my fault. Whether you got it through genes or through experience or through environment, I gave it to you. But I can't give you the recovery. You must forgive me because I can't pay for it anymore. I can't pay for it anymore." And you know, once that happened, once I let them dump their poison and I agreed and we hugged and we cried, then all that has disappeared. And I can't tell you the last time there was an unkind word said between my daughters and I. Now my granddaughters, they're not drinkers, but gosh, do they need to. Oh, God. My great-grandson is now supposed to be staying part-time with Richard and I, but I think that somehow we've taken over. I don't know how that happened, but he's there. Oh, and it is wonderful. I took my oldest granddaughter to a conference once where I had a big white blouse and covers a multitude of tortillas and beans, and I had a big white blouse, and she said, "Grandma, you look just like the white angel." Because all she's seen is what you've done with me. I could never have unraveled it. I was a sick woman in a dirty room in Mira Loma. And today I can tell you that I walk in the sunny side of the street. There's peace and love in our home. We're both, Richard and I, are dedicated to making me happy. And when I iron his shirts, they're all color coordinated. They're my shirts, I just let him wear them. I cook Mexican food because he thinks I'm a great cook, so I'm cooking all the time. And we have a happy home, and we have peace in our home because we are both members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because God has touched us, as he has touched you. Thank you.